Carlosophies, I'm Carlene Nimmo. Time to meet some of my very cool friends.
Hey there. So it's just me today. After 8 or 9 months on a wait list, finally saw a psychiatrist yesterday for my ADHD assessment. No surprises. I'm ADHD. So about to start the process of medication. And I've had a few questions about why I decided to get assessed, a few questions about medication, a few questions about the process and what the benefits are of having a diagnosis. So I thought I'd just jump behind the mic and ramble on. So in true ADHD fashion, I will probably go in all kinds of directions and it may not make a lot of sense. Hopefully you can get some key moments and takeaways from this for yourself if you're curious. Now, I want to start by saying, obviously, not a psychiatrist, not a psychologist, do not pretend to be. I am purely speaking on my own experience and I would, you know, I guess it's not, I wouldn't say I have limited understanding. I have, as a classic autistic ADHD person or classic autistic person, I've done a lot of research on ADHD and autism, particularly in women. But obviously, this is not constituting any health advice. I'm just basically telling you what the process has been for me, any things I think you need to know if you're considering going down the path. And let's just kind of kick off, I guess. So starting with why. Why did I want to go down the path of assessment? So it's interesting. And I guess like I'm going to talk a little bit about autism here too, because both are, first of all, they're so co-occurring now. Interestingly, I either read or it was in an interview recently, someone saying that, I'm trying to think of who it was and where the context was. Oh, you know what? We did an episode of Darling Shine that comes out tomorrow with Monique Mitchelson, who is from the Neurodivergent Woman podcast. And she had mentioned that up until the DSM-5, you couldn't actually diagnose someone with autism and ADHD. And so you either had one or the other. And what they're realizing now is that it is really super co-occurring, which actually is the reason why I went for an assessment. I've mentioned this before in multiple interviews, including the one with Alison Davies. One of the big aha moments for me on the autism front was reading The Divergent Mind by Janara Nirenberg. I think that's her name. Their name? Her name? I'm not sure of their pronouns, so I'm just going to say their. And that book was really eye-opening for me. I listened to the autism chapter and I was just like, tick, 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 wow, tick, 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 tick. When I listened to the ADHD one, I definitely resonated with big portions of it, but there were also parts I was like, no. Like for me, time, well, I'm never late for anything. In fact, I have, this is the interesting thing, right? And this is the literal thinking sometimes that happens. I can't say whether it happens for ADHD people necessarily, but it certainly is a thing for me as an autistic person, is I take things quite literally. So if you're saying to me, ADHD people are always late, I go, well, I'm never late, or but the panic to get me there on time is very real. I have such a weird relationship with time. And I remember going to a retreat back in 2012. And hi, Krista, if you're listening, it was a retreat in Bali and it was such a good experience. But anyway, I went there and we got a session with an acupuncturist, and that session could focus on anything that we wanted to kind of like improve in our lives. And I wanted to change my relationship with time, because there's just all of this like, oh, anxiety, got to get there on time. I'm always early to everything, but it's a fucking stress getting there on time. So when I heard ADHDers are always late, I wasn't thinking the wider picture. Oh, yeah, well, I'm not always late, but it's because I'm so so militant when it comes and so anxious about being at places on time that if I didn't, I would be late all the time, you know, but I've created these like weird rituals and structures to be able to get me to places on time because it's really important to me to do that. So, okay, so why was I saying that? Let's go back. So what I was saying before was like why I got the diagnosis. So that's right. So I went to my GP back in maybe I only waited 6 months for my diagnosis. Anyway, it's been like months. It must have been in December, actually. I had a wedding to go to in Perth for my cousin and I was flying by myself and I was flying from Brisbane Airport, which is like a two to two and a half hour drive, just depending on roadworks. And it's always really anxiety inducing. I really only ever fly out of Brisbane when it's international. And when it's international, it's like I feel sick for days because there's so much I have to do. Like find long-term parking, make sure I get to the place on time, know where I'm going. Like it's a lot of things. And so whenever I travel, I get really anxious, so anxious that I vomit. And it's just not a pleasant experience. So I had this trip coming up to Perth and I thought to myself, fuck, I just need something to calm me down a little bit so I can not feel so sick and not have sleepless nights in the lead up worrying that I've forgotten things. Like it's all very irrational, but very real for me. So I went to the GP and I made this like towards the end of last year, I thought to myself, you know what? I want to start exploring some of this stuff because at the time I had my autism diagnosis and I know there's so many things that are comorbid or really commonly occurring with autism. And I've had a lot of health issues in my life, just things like, and it's just shit that I've lived with. So chronic allergies, I wee a lot, obsessive amounts, and I always have to know where the toilet is because if I eat anything from takeaway, straight out the other end. So there's just like some little niggle. I have really bad wrists. I'm clumsy as fuck. There's just like all these little things that I wanted to see if I could kind of tick off. And so I started to think, well, I'll just go to the doctor regularly and have a look at some of these things and see if we can draw some parallels or, like find some commonalities between them. And just to make my life a bit easier, why should I have to live with all of these things, just kind of accepting the low-hanging fruit of life? Like, maybe there's some things. Like I accept that these are the things that I have, but like maybe I can improve them and why not just see what's going on? So I went to the GP, had a chat with him about the upcoming trip and how anxious I was and how I'd experienced a lot of anxiety all of my life. Basically went in with my life story and he had said, well, if you've been diagnosed as autistic at 46, chances are high that you're also ADHD. So why don't we just go and get you assessed and see what happens? Because I strongly suspect that your anxiety is in a big part just untreated ADHD. So let's kind of go down that path and see where it leads. So then I waited, obviously, on the wait list for whatever it was, 7 months, and the slight exaggeration, 8 or 9 months, 7 months it would have been. So the day finally came and I wasn't really sure what to expect. So in terms of the process, basically you go to your GP, you get a referral. Now, this is something that I didn't know. So my GP gave me a referral to a bunch of different psychiatrists in my local region, which is the Northern Rivers. And I rang around and most of them didn't have availability. Some of them were like, the earliest we could get you in was November, and I'm like, really? November? And the pricing was just like, whoa, fuck, really? Geez, okay. So I rang around and got a lot of, sorry, not taking patients now. Sorry, wait list is, you know, in excess of 9-12 months. And then I found the psychiatrist that I, that another one on the list that my doctor knew, and he had said, like, reach out. So I did that, and his availability was June, which was a lot better than November or not at all. Now, a few people have said to me, oh, there's this great place online that you can go. It's called Fluence Clinic, I think, and they do online assessments. And, you know, they'll get you in like kind of 4 to 5 weeks is the average wait time. Now, I was kind of like, I found out a bit too late because my appointment was in kind of like 6 weeks before I knew about this Fluence Clinic. But actually, New South Wales is one of the states where, because I live south of the border. So over the border in Queensland, I could get in to see a psychiatrist way quicker, but I can't actually get access to medication if I'm diagnosed in another state other than New South Wales. Because in New South Wales, from my understanding, in order to access medication, you need to get approval from the Ministry, New South Wales Ministry of Health, and that can't be done in other states. So if you're in New South Wales, you need to go to your GP and you need to get a referral to a psychiatrist that is based in New South Wales. You can't use an Australia-wide clinic like Fluence because of the state legislation around the dexamphetamines or, you know, the medication that you take as an, or that you can take as an ADHD person. So that's just like a caveat. I guess if you're in New South Wales, GP, local or New South Wales based psychiatrist, and outside, I don't know what the other states are, but I think most of the other states you can do online if you want to. So that's that. Now, there was something else that I wanted to say that popped into my head about 5 minutes ago while I was talking, and now I can't access that. So let me think. Oh, yeah. Yep. Now, the other thing that's really important to note is that psychiatrists are the only ones that can prescribe you medication. So when you're, like, for my autism assessment, I went to a psychologist because for autism, there is no medication. There's nothing to be, there's nothing that they can do to fix me in terms of medication. And I use that in quoted commas if you weren't picking up the sarcasm in my voice. That was like a, I don't know if it was sarcasm, but it was like a, you know, basically I'm saying I don't need fixing anyway, but there is no medication to help. So you can just go, if you're going to get an autism assessment, you can just go to a psychologist. You don't need to go to a psychiatrist for that. A psychologist will allow you to, having the assessment through a psychologist, I believe, don't quote me on this, will allow you to access NDIS. I haven't gone down that route because I feel like I have enough scaffolding in my life and I'm pretty good at self-advocating these days. So, yeah, so for autism, psychologist, for ADHD, you can go to a psychologist for assessment. However, you won't be able to access medication if you wanted to go down that path through a psychologist. It has to be a psychiatrist. So psychiatrists are the ones that prescribe medication and psychologists cannot do that. So if you do go to a psychologist for an assessment for ADHD, you're still then going to have to go and be assessed by a psychiatrist. So basically saying if you want to go down the medication route, psychiatrist is the way to go. Okay, so that's kind of that. So the assessment was pretty quick, actually. We were kind of done in 35 minutes. He asked me a bunch of questions and I answered them. And then he was like, well, you're definitely ADHD. There's no doubt. And so I have a script for, what's it called? Oh, Anyway, Viennese, I can't remember, something like that. And basically I'll take a small amount for the first week and then up the dose for the weeks 2 and 3 and then further up the dose in 3 and 4 and then come back in 3, 4 and 5 and then come back in week 5 and reassess with the psychiatrist, and he will adjust, make any adjustments, and from there, from my understanding and my conversation with my GP, it will be referred back to my GP and I can go through the care process with them rather than having to go back to a psychiatrist each time for a script, basically. So, yeah. The Viennese, I'm going to have to look this up. Totally got it wrong. Vyvanse, I think it is. It's a slow release, so lasts a lot longer through the day, but we just kind of build up slowly because I do have, like, I am quite sensitive to caffeine in that if I have an espresso martini past 4 o'clock, I have trouble sleeping that night. That could be the alcohol too, because after I have a drink, I sleep like shit. But I think it is partly the caffeine. Stimulants sometimes feel a bit too much for me. I can get a bit like, you know, even more scattered, if that makes sense. Like my energy just feels scattered, not necessarily my mind. My mind feels alert, but my body feels a bit like brrr. So we're just going to kind of see how that process goes and what the difference on me feels like. So the psychiatrist had said, you know, you wear glasses, you know, when you haven't worn glasses and then you get your first prescription and you put them on and you're like, whoa, I can see clearly. This is like wild that I couldn't see properly before. I didn't know how bad it was before I put the glasses on, and now I can see, and whoa, this is amazing. And so he said that that's kind of what the experience should feel like. When we get you to the right level of dosage, it should be like putting on a pair of glasses where you're like, oh, fantastic. Now, I want to talk a little bit about this because one of the things that comes up a lot when it comes to any, you know, ADHD is not a mental health issue. It's a neurodevelopment thing. But whenever we're going, like, medication has a stickiness around it sometimes. Like, some people have shit around people taking antidepressants. Some people have shit around people taking anti-anxiety medication. And a lot of people have shit around people taking ADHD medication because it's a class 8 drug. Class 8 drug? I think that's right. It is an amphetamine. And look, hey, not going to lie, I have taken amphetamine in my 20s when I was a party girl, and it did kind of make me quite alert. So there's this weird thing that goes on in my mind and a lot of people where it's like, well, should, you know, am I just kind of, am I the, and it's not necessarily that I have this doubt in my mind. I don't, I'm pretty good with the decision I'm making. But there is this like kind of general rhetoric around, well, you're just basically seeing a legal speed dealer. Now, I think that's a complete lack of understanding because, like, when, unless you have an ADHD brain, you wouldn't know what it feels like to have an ADHD brain. You wouldn't tell me not to wear glasses. Well, some people actually have. Some people even say you probably shouldn't wear glasses because it makes your eyesight shitter. Well, actually, it makes my eyesight better. And what's wrong with me wearing glasses every day? What's wrong with me taking medication every day if it improves the quality of my life? Nothing. We got to fucking get over that shit. Anyway, so, yeah, so what else? What were the other questions? Oh, medication, like, what does it do for you? So, like I said, it's like it's, I'm yet to be on the right dose, so there's still a while to go for me to say how it feels for me. But I do feel like it's This is the thing, because before, when I went to Perth and I went to the doctor had given me some Valium to take just to help with the lead up to the flight. And I took it and I didn't feel different. I thought I was going to feel different. But it's interesting, and I think I've said this before maybe on the podcast, what I felt was just a lack of what I would have felt. So it's an interesting thing when you think about how something like that impacts you, because you're just experiencing something differently, but you're not necessarily feeling any different. I was feeling calm, which was unusual in that circumstance because I don't usually feel calm in that circumstance, but it was an absence of how I would have felt rather than a change. Like, does that make sense? So it's like, you know, if you take something like, okay, so if you're drinking alcohol, you're drinking the alcohol and at some point you kind of go, whoa, I'm shit-faced. You feel the difference, you know what I mean? And it's, sometimes with like Valium or ADHD meds, it's more the absence of what would have been there than a change, if that makes sense. So what were the other questions that I had? Hang on a sec. Right. So what I wanted to talk about was what I will get out of it. What will the medication do for me? What the medication is intended to do is to help me focus and to help me be less distracted. So it's so funny. Now, this is what happened when I got the autism diagnosis too. All of a sudden, it was like I could see all these things in my life. It was like a domino effect. I could see all these things in my life that had been impacted, and I thought there was something wrong with me, or, you know, like it was just very clear. Oh my God, that was just because I'm autistic. Oh my God, that's just because I'm ADHD. Like I was having a discussion with Miko about it last night, talking about the process and, you know, and like the taking the meds and all that kind of jazz and, you know, and how basically the psychiatrist had said, often when you have someone who is ADHD, they end up with a partner who is very organized. And that was like, I seem very organized, but actually, if we go back 20 years, I was not at all organized. Like this has been a process for me to cope in life, because in my 20s, I was a clusterfuck. And that was okay because I didn't have the same level of responsibility that I have now. I have a kid. I got to get her to school every day. I have to have a job, you know, and there's, whereas in your 20s, there's like less of that pressure, you know, because if you lose your job early 20s, you could just fucking move home if you have a kind of good relationship with your parents like I did. There was scaffolding there in the way of like not as much pressure to actually survive. Because I still was being cared for. And when I met Miko, he kind of stepped in to help me with the stuff, right? Like he was talking about how up until 2012, and I'd been self-employed since 2004. And so, you know, every tax time, oh God, I would forget to pay the tax bill and I'd procrastinate on it and it would just cause so much stress and I'd be sick and then I'd end up crying and being like, I don't know what to do, because oh my God, I forgot to pay the tax again, blah, blah, blah. And he'd be like, Carly, you've got to get on top of this. You know, like I would never fucking service my car. I would always forget registration. That, you know, I got I remember I signed up for one of those when I was 18. I signed up for one of those 6-month interest free plans and I forgot about it. And then I just got this astronomical bill because I'd not made a single payment and, you know, and it just kind of went up. I think it was like 25% interest or something. And I was paying it off for years. When I was at uni, I was an okay TR, but I didn't do, like I just did arts and psychology. I didn't do any math or science. So my TR was kind of like at the highest it could have been, might have been back then, like I don't know, 60 or 70. I got like 55 or something, which was enough to get into teaching, but weirdly, not enough to get into what I wanted to do, which was media arts. So I went into teaching education. And then in the first semester, I transferred into media arts, but I forgot to, and I don't, look, I think at the time I thought that it was the university's fault that they had lost the paperwork, but now I'm pretty sure I probably never remembered to hand it in. And like just shit like that. It was like big, I'd forget big stuff. And it's only through excessive reminders. Everything is in my calendar. Even this week, my rego, car rego's due. I fucking always forget it and I leave it until the last minute every fucking time. And Miko reminds me all through June, remember to book your car in, remember to book your car in, remember to book your car in, but it's after hours. So then I have to put a reminder in my phone and then I fucking look at it, but I'm doing something else and then I forget. And then it'll be like, have you booked a car in? Oh, fuck. So I meant to book it in last Wednesday. I had multiple reminders and then I was in the office completely distracted, didn't do it, and then thought this morning, fuck, I've got to do the rego. So I rang them early, dropped the car in, and the woman there was like, oh, it'll have to be when we get to it, and it was fucking freezing today. I had little time in the canteen. This is like too much information. You don't even know to know this. But anyway, basically, I still haven't got my fucking car slip ready. I have to go back on Friday, which is the day before my fucking rego's due, so fingers crossed it passes. You know, like this is my life as an ADHD person. And how much easier would it be if I could remember things, if I could focus, if I didn't have to get up 700 times while I'm doing an edit? A lot of my work is detail oriented, which takes a lot of focus that I don't necessarily have. So, you know, I just feel always torn, trying to get something done, constantly being distracted. So, you know, what the medication will do is help me to be more present. The other thing that my psychiatrist had said was like, because I had said, oh, do I just kind of take it on the days where I need to focus? Like if I've got an edit to do, should I take, you know, the medication then, but like not take it on the days where I'm just kind of don't need that level of focus? And he said something really interesting. He said, look, there's good evidence to suggest that taking it every day is a wise move. He said, you know, have you got a kid? I was like, yep, she's 10. He's like, well, she's probably beyond Lego. But if you imagine like a few years ago, if she had said to you, Mum, can you sit and play Lego with me? You would have been like, oh, fuck. Oh, all right. And then you would have just been sitting there, not present, because you're thinking, oh, I've got to get the washing out. Oh, blah, 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 blah. Oh, fucking blah, blah, blah. And I just can't be present. And that's not, like, that's not how I want to be as a parent. I want to be able to be present with my kid. So if this medication can help me to be more present in conversations, to not constantly talk over the top of people, to have some coherence when it comes to like stream of consciousness or like thought, and not just be like, my brain feels like this. Just constantly going in a million different directions. Imagine if I didn't have to experience that all the time. What could I achieve? You know, one of the questions he asked was, did I finish uni? No, I didn't. I got fucking 2 units away from finishing and my life was a complete shit show. I was in an abusive relationship. He was very controlling and I got glandular fever. I was having to work 2 jobs at the time. Then I got glandular fever because I was totally burnt out. And then I managed to get a good job that paid well, so I didn't have to do 2 jobs in the big smoke in the city in Melbourne. And I got pneumonia in the first couple of weeks of being there, which threw me out too. And then that's when I just had to put the kibosh on my university degree because I was like, yes, I only have 2 units left, but I have to pay the bills to survive. I'm kind of on my own here. I didn't have the safety net that I'd had. So you know, just those things. And he had said, like, you know, I had said to him, I feel like it's so interesting. So remember, I had audiobook. If you've been around here for a while, I wrote my memoir in 2000, and actually it was my 40th birthday. I finished it, I think, around then, and I just recorded it as an audiobook. It was actually called Memoir of a Mediocre Life, because and people were like, that's really depressing. And I was like, well, it's just the way it is. You know, like, mediocre doesn't actually necessarily mean anything bad, but I have always felt like I've never quite reached my potential. Like, I have all of these great ideas, and I believe I'm highly intelligent, but I've just never, even like as a student, you know, it was like she has lots of potential, but I never realized my potential. And what if taking some medication can help me do that? Now, I'm okay. Like, I'm kind of in a place where I'm okay if life doesn't move any more forward than what I have. My needs are met right now. I do work that I love with people that I love. I love my family. I have a home. Like, I don't have these big, grandiose dreams of greater, bigger, more. I'm really quite content where I am. But what if things were just a bit easier? What if things were easy? Oh my God, I'm going to cry. I actually wrote a post-it note after I had a session with someone I was working with. They were coaching me at the time, and they had said to me, what if it was easy? And I think I've had moments where things have felt easy. But most of my life has been a struggle. Most of my life has been a struggle. So if I can do this, and, you know, it just feels on the first level, same as the autism diagnosis, I feel validated in my experience of life, because it hasn't been easy. I've had big life filled with a lot of struggle. And therefore, like, I think I said it in the Alison Davies episode, I'm much more comfortable in struggle because I don't know what, like, I'm just used to that. But what if it wasn't always a struggle? I think I'll always have some level of struggle being autistic. Like, I'd probably never be, I feel like I cope okay socially some of the time in the right environments. I think I thrive, actually. But in other areas, you know, I'm always going to have some struggle. And like, I'm okay with that. But what if it got to be a little bit easier? Oh, yeah. So I guess that's really all I've got to say. I think I've been talking for fucking way longer than I thought I was going to. But anyway, hopefully I'll be back next week with an interview. We'll just say I've got a couple that I'm really excited about. So one is with a client and friend of mine who we've got another one of those parallel kind of live stories. So she ran a co-working space, and she, after hearing about me going back to get a job for the first time in 20 years, she also went and got one. And so we're going to have a chat about that. We're going to have a chat about, like, being solely self-employed for so long that you felt you were unemployable, and then going back and actually getting a job. And what has that been like for us? And we'll be honest about it, because, you know, like, There are great things about having a job, and there are shit things about having a job. And there are great things about being self-employed, and there are plenty of shit things about being self-employed. And we don't have to be, you know, we can do both if we want. It's okay for us to have security if we need that. I definitely do. Or not, you know, like, so that's the conversation that I want to have with her. And then another ex-client of mine, and just really cool human. She recently left her husband of like over 30 years, moved back to the UK, and it's been quite a ride in her finding her voice and not being afraid to speak up and tell her story, which has really been quite a process for her to kind of get okay with. And I really want to have a conversation with her a little bit about her story, but mostly about like her finding the courage to stand up and say, no, this is not okay anymore. Because I find like a lot of women, particularly of my vintage, Gen X and probably late millennials, you know, we can be sometimes a little too accommodating and compliant. And I think about like how monsters like Harvey Weinstein exist is due to the silence of women and men, but women don't want to rock the boat. And what happens when you fucking rock the boat so much it tips over? That's basically this woman's story. So I'm really excited to tell that. Whether or not it'll come out next Monday, I'm unsure. We'll just see how we go. Keep your eye on the feed. And if you want to connect with me in between episodes, I'm always on Instagram stories. So pop on over to Instagram and follow me at Carlosophies. Until next time, peace out.